Is going to present on holistic planning. So hopefully she can solve all of the challenges we've brought up so far.
I'll do my best. I'm actually in the Office of Planning, Evaluation, and Development for the whole county of Department of Public Health. I used to work for Maternal Child Adolescent House. I don't know how that came up. But the title of my remarks is Thinking Holistically, Planning Strategically, and I'm so excited to be here today, especially among these really great speakers, because what they've lent already today will definitely feed into what I'm going to talk about, so I'm glad I'm last. I do not have any financial relationships to disclose, although if you know of any financial relationships I could find in this market, speak to me afterwards. The objectives of my remarks today will be to look at health issues related to the physical and social environments that fall out kind of the customary scope of public health when we think of traditional public health, but nonetheless really impact health status, to identify the challenges and barriers faced by the county of Los Angeles, and also highlight some creative and innovative ideas. And before going on, I wanted to recognize Wendy Schiffer, who's the director for our Planning, Evaluation, and Development Unit in the front. So she contributed a lot to this presentation. To give some context about which I'm speaking, Los Angeles County is quite a diverse and large jurisdiction. We have 88 cities and unincorporated areas, but we are the health department for 85 of those cities. We have over 4,000 square miles of territory that ranges from coastline beach communities to really urban dense areas to the Antelope Valley, which is very desert and rural community. And we have about 10,000 residents, give or take a few thousand. And we really are a traditional public health department. We separated from the Department of Health Services in 2006, and previous to that, the Department of Mental Health was formed on its own as well. So we don't do any medical care. We operate about 14 clinics and a TB clinic and a rehabilitation clinic. But in those clinics, we really deliver just basic STD services and some other basic services. So we do not provide medical care. We have about 4,000 employees, so it's big enough that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing so often. We have 39 programs that range from the chronic disease program, which I'll talk about later, to environmental health, to the Office of AIDS, things like that. And our operating budget annually is about $750 million. So with that, in September of this year, just last month, we introduced the strategic plan that will serve us to 2011. It's a short plan because it was really an update of a previous plan. But there's a strong focus, and this came from the top, this came from our director, Dr. Jonathan Fielding, about incorporating the physical and social environment elements into this plan to really kind of push the public health envelope to incorporate some non-traditional public health work. So why the physical and social environments? I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure, but as you know, the physical and social environments greatly impact health, and they are largely preventable. We found this time and time again, and when they're not prevented, they're very costly, and so these are really good things to look at. Some examples that pertain particularly to Los Angeles County, but you might find some in your own communities. Number one, for physical environment, air quality, we're consistent among many things, and one of it is bad air quality in Los Angeles County. And this has a lot to do with our goods movement, getting goods from here to there. It's multi-sectored, so it includes the shipping industry, the rail industry, and the trucking industry. You have non-regulated ships coming from overseas. They drop their containers and they give them to the truckers, which have their trucks idling all day, picking up those containers and then taking them inland to either the rail depots or traveling across the country. And the Long Beach and Los Angeles ports make up the fifth busiest port in the world, which is significant because 40% of the nation's goods come through our area. And the California Air Resources Board pamphlet that came out said that Southern California is really subsidizing the nation's good with its health. And it's true. If you take a map of Los Angeles County and kind of mash that with a map of asthma rates around the county, you see this extreme dense part of asthma rates as it relates to where the ships come in and then where the trucks and rails leave to go out to the inland and across the U.S. And of course, studies show that air pollution is linked to climate change. Also, the design and layout of cities and the communities. California, Southern California specifically, is really car friendly and not too pedestrian friendly. So when we talk about the physical environment, we look at things like walkability, bikeability, and the viability of taking public transportation, which doesn't always exist in all of our communities. Open space, we've talked about open space a little bit today, but is there a place for children and families to play, to get that physical activity, and is it safe, not only in terms of violence and crime, but also in terms of traffic? The number three leading cause of premature death in Los Angeles County is motor vehicle related. So definitely, when you look at the layout of cities, is it conducive to a healthy lifestyle? Obesity is strongly connected to the physical environment, and we've noticed in Los Angeles County that there is an extreme lack of access to grocery stores with healthy foods and fresh produce. If you look at this map, it's the prevalence of childhood obesity in 2005, and the extreme dense rates of obesity are centered right in the lowest income areas of Los Angeles County. And if you drive through these communities, could be Watts or Compton, Southgate, areas like that, they don't have any kind of stores that would provide healthy food alternatives. What you see is a lot of fast food and area or stores to get processed foods. And these are usually cheaper. So if you're spending money on food, you're going to buy two hamburgers for $1 instead of a salad for $6, something like that. And then I spoke earlier about limited access to open space, which is very significant in these areas. It's not safe, and there's not many parks to play in. Some examples of the social environment. The first speaker presented on homelessness, and indeed we do have a problem. On any given night in Los Angeles County, there are 74,000 homeless people, which is twice the size of my hometown. It's quite a problem with short-term and chronic homelessness in Los Angeles County. Also, the poverty rate is extremely high. Over a third of the population was at or below 200% of the federal poverty level, which ends up being about $42,000 for a family of four, which is very difficult to live on anywhere right now, but mainly in Los Angeles County. And that's a third of our population. Educational attainment is strongly tied to health status. And we see that in 2005, the LAUSD, this is the largest school district, I think, outside of New York. It has 900,000 kids, and 45% was the dropout rate. And that's staggering. That is a real problem. Drug use is also rampant in Los Angeles County among adults 18 years or older. In 2005, 1.4% reported using meth at least once in the last year. Now, this may not seem very high, but when you compare it with other drug abuse statistics, it is significant. And we see that meth is quickly becoming the drug of choice in Los Angeles County. And it's not only bad physically for the person, physically and mentally for the person abusing, but also it releases a lot of toxins because it's homespun in factories and houses and things like that. So we see it has a strong environmental tie. So what are some of our challenges and obstacles in trying to go forward in this work in the physical and social environment arenas? And these are not specific to Los Angeles County. They may sound familiar to some of you, but the first is funding. I noted earlier that we have an operating budget of about $750 million. The vast majority of that comes with strings attached. It's very mandatory heavy. And so we have very small amount of funds for discretionary spending to kind of delve deeper into these non-traditional public health arenas. A good example is our nutrition program receives a grant from the USDA Department of Ag that largely supports most of what it does, but it's very strict. They have to operate in very tight guidelines with the USDA regulates. So, we don't have a lot of spending money to go and work in this new obesity initiative or do this or that. So we're greatly tied to the funding stream. Also, the ownership. As I mentioned, the strategic plan is an update of a 2005 plan. And the reason why the 2005 plan kind of fell by the wayside is because we had all these great ideas, but there was no ownership. Everybody agreed that these were really great concerns and good causes in which to engage, but nobody had the ability to say, okay, I'll devote this much of my resources and time to this cause. And everybody is very stretched for staff and resources and funding. And we also, going into this work, we weren't sure what role Department of Public Health could play. We would be at the table with new partners, such as city administrators, different CBOs that we weren't with before, also working at the state and federal level. Not all of us are policy savvy, so what role can we play in Department of Public Health? And as a government organization, we can't lobby, so there's a fine line of advocacy versus lobbying, and people were unsure what they could do. Also, political considerations. As a government organization, we do respond, and we operate under the direction of the Board of Supervisors for LA County. This is five supervisors and with all different political agendas, political leanings, and so we really have to take into consideration how they feel and what they'll support. Thanks. Some of the solution and innovations that I wanted to highlight as we've gone forward in this work is the Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention Program, the Community Liaison Program, and the Menu Labeling and Trans Fat initiatives. First, the Chronic Disease and Injury Prevention Program. This is something that we created when we divided from the Department of Public Health. Our director wanted to create something that would really have, as I mentioned before, ownership was a problem, that could own these issues a little more in depth. And so we have programs within this program like physical activity, nutrition, injury and violence prevention, but we also created a new program called Policies for Livable and Active Communities and Environments, also known as the PLACE program. And so that's been a good home for a lot of these issues. The board approved us creating this department, this new division, but it had to be cost neutral. So what we did was we took reimbursements for Medi-Cal administrative activities and put it towards creating this unit. And so that was kind of an innovative way that we didn't have the money, the traditional amount of money that we usually, or the traditional bucket of money that we choose from, but we were able to pull it from a different venue. And so that's worked really well. We did a health equity project that was funded by the California Endowment that brought key public health stakeholders together, and we looked at five domains like access to health care, neighborhood conditions, social connectedness. We looked at employment and income, and we looked at education, and we brought people together, divided in subgroups, and then really tried to brainstorm over the period of several months on how we can get into these areas and what role public health could play. And that currently is being drafted into a report of recommendations that we can implement. And the other project we did was a built environment grant project that recently got underway in five different communities in Los Angeles County. And it brought together a city, a nonprofit, and a different agency, academia or a private planning organization, to try to address some of the physical environment issues in different communities. The second one is the Community Liaison Program, and its mission really is to promote and educate within the community. These are field public health nurses that are within the community throughout Los Angeles County. And something I wanted to highlight was a really great project called Designing Healthy and Active Communities. And this was funded by the Kaiser Community Grant. It was a multi-sector partnership with the City of Southgate, private planning division, and then public health law and policy, and of course, Department of Public Health, and then Transportation and Land Use Collaborative. What they did was they brought together different community members, so they really tried to get buy-in from the community. The goal was to get public health elements in the city's general plan. So they created an existing conditions report. They looked at the layout of the city, and then they did a best practices survey within the community. What would the community want to see in their community? And also, they did a literature review looking at the best practices from other jurisdictions. They had civic engagement with three workshops focusing on planning and health, access to healthy foods, and walkability. And a lot of this was empowerment, too, to the community that didn't know they could lend a voice in these issues. And they are currently creating a Designing Healthy and Active Communities handbook, and they were able to get public health elements for this specific project in the City of Southgate's general plan. The third is menu labeling and trans fat initiatives, and I'm humbled to go after New York because they truly are the forward-thinking and forward-moving on these issues, and because they did it, of course, we had to be involved in menu labeling and trans fat. Super competitive, but our director, Dr. Jonathan Fielding, our fearless leader, pictured right there next to McDonald's, he identified it as a priority, and we were able to get support from the County Board of Supervisors and the City of LA to really address this issue. And we started on a local level. The County Board of Supervisors decided all their jurisdiction is unincorporated areas. So they decided to try to get menu labeling incorporated in just those areas, and it got wind up at the state level, and so state legislatures decided to run with it, and they created a bill. With the Trans Fat Initiatives, we actually instituted a trans fat program in Los Angeles County. It hasn't reached the success we hoped it would, because it was a voluntary program. So something we learned from that is it needs to be mandatory for it to really be successful. But with the menu labeling, the health impact assessment is something we created and we were able to give to elected officials, and they could actually cite that, and community agencies were able to cite that as well when they went and testified before Congress or the Assembly and Senate at the state level. We partnered with jurisdictions like New York City and other communities that had done that, other counties, and we got it signed by Governor Schwarzenegger just last month in 2008. It takes effect next week, or next 2011, not next week. So just really quickly, the conclusions, we move fast in LA. The conclusions would be that we do have a really important role to play. That support from top leadership is crucial moving forward. We're really fortunate to have leadership that is really forward-thinking and really wants to be involved in these issues, whether we have the funding or not. And also that partnerships at the community level are so necessary for going forward. And with that, just the last one, meet energy with energy. You know, there's so many good things we could work on, but it's good to really look at where the community is, where the energy is at that moment. We can't do it alone, and we need that partnership. So to really answer to that need. And with that, I thank you for your time.
So that was great. I'm going to open it up for questions, but I have to warn Maxanne, because now coming from New York City and now being used to the menu labeling, I have to say, being in San Diego this week, I've gone into restaurants and been like, but wait, there's no sign telling me the calories. It's something you become very accustomed to. Yes, sir.
That is a very big challenge, and we do work with private landlords as well as with the New York City Department of Housing. And unfortunately, that is one of the challenges that we are seeing right now. There is some reluctance because, of course, there is so much of a cost attributed to making those structural changes. So right now, it's really getting the landlords to sit down and talk about some of the things that can be done and to find some of the resources available to be able to provide them with some assistance and funding so that they can make some of those structural changes. Whenever they're not able to change the actual structure or fix the problem of mold, what we are recommending whenever possible is for them to be able to relocate the family, at least temporarily, in order to alleviate the problem. So that is part of what we're doing right now, and still in negotiations with many of the landlords to be able to form a coalition amongst them to resolve some of that issue. Yes, the sports program is a collaboration with an Asphalt Green. It's a sports facility in the community. It's a very well-known program, and they're able to provide gymnastics, basketball, different soccer sports, running sports for the kids so that they're able to engage them in physical activity, because obesity is part of the problem with some of our families as well. That collaboration has been very well received by the families, especially those that, parents that were afraid to have their children participate in sports and in the gym. So seeing that their hospitalization rates have decreased somewhat, that they have gone to the emergency room less times, and most importantly, that their children are not staying home as a result. And because obesity is so much of an issue, it was a question of whether this child was getting out of breath because they had asthma, or was it just their obesity? So working with that, we've been able to show there was one particular case of an adolescent who did not participate in a lot of sports. She was obese. And by showing her that taking her medication properly and still participating in the sports, she would be able to participate in this Asphalt Green program, she realized that it was more a function of losing weight. She lost about 10 pounds over the course of 6 weeks, which was fantastic. And she was able to moderate her eating and change some of her habits and realize she wasn't as out of breath as she thought because of the asthma. So it's stories like that that we want to continue to work on. And it is a collaboration so far. We've had our families, 81% of them go to at least six of the eight weekly sessions. So it's been very successful.
I think Patricia had her hand up first.
Hi, my name is Patricia. I run the Washington Heights Network for Asthma. In our program, we do a lot of cross-referring, and also for the Program Asthma Network. And
wonderful.
Thank you for sharing information about the center. I've heard so much about it. Can you tell me a little bit how the center interacts with the care coordination program that already exists? I'm not clear on how the pieces work together.
Well, with the HAN, we sit down with all of the different agencies to talk about their services, the services that are available. We make sure that through the referral process, we are able to expedite an appointment so that each family member will be able to go to see their physician a lot faster than they ordinarily would. A lot of the meetings have been about really making sure that we standardize the outcomes so that when we're looking at the variables, everyone is looking at the same variables, whether the families, the child has been put on the inhaled corticosteroids, whether or not they've been, we're looking at the ED visits and the hospitalizations, and everything is consistent. So in reality, it's just a way of having the organizations that have been functioning separately actually look at the same things and communicate with each other so that we have that continuity of service. And what the East Harlem Asthma Center is trying to do is to do comprehensive assessments of these families so that we know their asthma history, we know a lot of the information about what their needs would be, and then we are referring out to all of the agencies to make sure that the services are provided for them when we don't have that system in place. And I need to just make one point, and it is that the East Harlem Asthma Center does not provide treatment care at the storefront facility. So that is why it becomes so very important for us to really be very well connected with the hospitals and the clinics and the private physicians so that that treatment can in fact take place. You're welcome.
Yes, in the magenta sweater.
I actually have three questions, but I'll try to make them quick. First question is, are the asthma counselors that you're utilizing in the Center of
they are our MSWs. They're following the social work model. So we're making sure we wanted to have people that would be able to address the multiple issues that the families would have. So we thought it would be more important to have a specialist in social work than an asthma specialist. And right now we have very capable people, both within the hospitals and the other areas, providing asthma education for them. So that's the approach that we've taken. And, of course, we're finding that many of those families that have the asthma issues have multiple social illnesses that we have to deal with.
Approximately how much time is being asked of the physicians in completing the well-being?
The web-based? That is currently under development, so we are not asking them to spend any particular time, only that they complete specified information. We need to know severity scores. We need to make sure that we're assessing the families properly, that we're giving them the forms that they need, and of course that we're prescribing the medications. Very. It's still a work in progress, and of course, they always list just a very long list of why they can't do it. So we're working very hard to make sure that that actually takes place, and because they see how important it is, they are really coming around. And I think the Harlem Asthma Network has been very instrumental in making sure that that takes place.
Black sweater than gray shawl. You're the black sweater, yes.
I'm Louis Warren from Montreal Public Health, and my question is to Madame Hatch. As you know, it's one of the major issues in road injuries and even physical activity in the continuing increasing traffic volume. So do you address
We do. We're kind of a multifold process. We've been looking at public transportation in Los Angeles County, and we've worked on the countywide level to get more public transportation subsidies and incentives to people. We actually have a pretty good skeletal public health or public transportation system, but it's just not used as frequently as it could be used. And a lot of it is because people are so used to driving in their cars. And so at the county level, we've recently introduced like a pre-tax incentive for people along that. We were hoping for a subsidy, but we got the pre-tax, so it's a step in the right direction. But there's been a lot of movement lately, especially with gas prices in the U.S. going pretty high compared to what we usually have had. A lot of people are taking public transit right now. But another problem is with the 88 cities, it's just this, like you said, urban sprawl. It's very, like New York is so vertical, we're so horizontal. And with the cities in their own little fiefdoms everywhere, it's hard to get them to communicate, to plan with each other. We have multiple public transportation systems and just different buses that are, you know, from city to city, and do they all connect? And even the bike lanes that we're working to develop, they don't necessarily go from city to city. And so that's just a problem that we've been trying to work on a broader level. It's really difficult because we have so many jurisdictions in which we work and to get them to talk. But we've had some success in different areas where they've built, there's kind of Montreal definitely has this already, but like where you live and you can shop right there, and it's multi-use, thank you, and different land use strategies like that. We've seen that in LA lately, and they have a big push to redevelop downtown, and so we have a lot of apartments and lofts that have come in. But you're right, every year we gain more people. We don't necessarily lose many, and so it's very difficult because traffic is a major concern in Los Angeles. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Regarding the Los Angeles plan as well, I really think you're on the right track with looking at these root causes. But I was wondering what kind of support you had from the county commission or whoever is at the top, if you had interest from other departments, like the Department of Transportation and buy-in from them, and if not, what you've been doing to build those connections.
Well, something that the Board of Supervisors actually created without our instigation was to create an Environmental and Energy Planning Committee, and that pulls in, I think there are 25 different county departments, so it pulls in a good number of them, including Department of Public Works and Internal Services Division, which is kind of the infrastructure of the county, and some others, and we were invited to the table to look at the public transportation options, but also to look at building more green and to kind of do a whole thorough look at how our buildings are, how our systems work. And so that's been really nice, and that's been like county-wide driven. But as far as a lot of the things that I mentioned, this was something that it all started in our department, and we've tried to push it up. And becoming our own department was a big success because we were able to have our own say. We didn't have to go through another layer of bureaucracy to get what we wanted. And so that's been really helpful. But we have a lot of programs that have coalition. They're members of coalitions within the community. And so LA is a real hotbed of community advocates already. We have that infrastructure, and so just partnering with them, trying to provide the data. With the menu labeling initiative, that was something our director really, really wanted. And he pushed that and finally got, I think he got LA City to look at it, and then LA County, and then it went up to the state level. So it's kind of mainly coming from us up, but it also depends on what the trendy issue is at the time. And so that's where I'm saying meet energy with energy. With New York's momentum of trans fat and menu labeling, we knew that we had some leverage with the board because they don't want to be seen as, you know, out of it. So, it's interesting to look at the different issues and see what's viable at the moment, kind of. Does that answer?
Okay. Our time is up. I want to thank all of the presenters who did a great job. Let's give them another round of applause. And I'm sure they're happy to stick around for a couple of minutes up here if anyone wants to talk to them one-on-one. Thank you.
Central Harlem, and then the East Harlem Avenue Center is focused just on the East Harlem area.
It's terrible that you guys get so much money. Because Howard Children's
has a lot of money as well.
A lot of money. When we're using them as a model in Chicago, and so to see that you were able to, I'm just surprised that you guys get so much money.
We're able to coordinate it through the Department of Health and the District Public Health Office because they realize that it's so much of a problem.
So you're really taking on a different population, and you're sort of using a different model.
We are using a different model.
So you guys communicate back and forth?
We communicate, and the Harlem Children's Zone is part of our Harlem Asset Network because we make sure that we have the same information.
The families would be coming back and forth, too.
Well, they don't. Unfortunately, part of the restriction, and it's good for us because we're focusing on one community with one chronic illness, but the services that are rendered are strictly for those residing within that East Harlem area. So we have certain zip codes that we're able to work with as our catchment. And then, of course, we see all of the families. We provide education to the community at large. And whenever we're not able to provide the service because they are still involved, we refer them to the Harlem Children's Zone. And because of that connection with the District Public Health Office, we also have a school health director that focuses on the schools in both areas. So it really ties all of that together. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
One question. You mentioned that some of the physicians still aren't on board with prescribing inhaled corticosteroids. Even though I agree with them, I can kind of see where the ED docs are coming from. But are you encountering similar issues?
We are. It is getting a lot better. But initially, we found that so many of them just didn't have that as part of their prescription plan for one reason or the other. So it's really the understanding that by placing them on the inhaled corticosteroids, it really was going to make so much of a difference. We were looking at the asthma action plans, and across the board, it was just albuterol that was being prescribed. And we did. So it's really increasing. Not that the numbers are low to begin with, but they have improved significantly since everyone has started our corticosteroids.
I'm just kind of curious as to what the physician's reasons were. Given that, like, the NHLBI guidelines on inhaled corticosteroids have been out for a while, I mean, it's not a brand new thing.
The main reason was lack of adherence. And they said, why should I prescribe them if it's hard for them to take them? And unfortunately, it was really not understanding that so many of these clients, one, had a problem with the word steroid, so they were using it for that reason, but also didn't really understand the importance of taking medications when they're not symptomatic. And the fact that they were looking at asthma as asthma episodes, that acute illness really did not lend itself for them to take the medication. So, and the other thing is that we have a lot of clients that only go in the children of six. So,
it's not part of their understanding that you go to the doctor for a well care.
Right. So the physicians were prescribing medications for this acute illness, and they were really not focusing on the long-term care because so many of the clients just never came back until they were sick again. Mm-hmm. So that was another reason.
Well, hopefully through the work that you're doing with the families, you're helping the families to understand why it's important so that you can get the adherence up.
Yes, we really want to make sure that the families stay connected with the primary care physician, and also that the physician understands that the prescription has to come together with some education so that the families are able to understand what they need to do for that child. So it's a two-way street we're working on.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand it's a two-way street. I've heard that or read that before of docs who said, well, I don't want to, I'm not going to prescribe the steroid because I don't think that, they're going to take it.
Right.
And rather than going and say, okay, how can we help the family understand asthma is a chronic illness and why you need to take the medication regularly.
And there's always that time constraint.
Yeah. Well, if I could get your card also,
absolutely,
that would be great.
Because we're doing a very similar project. We're going to get our project manager here.
That's great. Thank you.
Great. And I'd be interested, do you have other programs that are doing the sports kind of component?
To my knowledge, the Harlem Children's Zone, which is located in Central Harlem, is also, I think they're doing something in swimming, which is something that we're looking to do eventually with Asphalt Green as well.
Great.
More and more programs are incorporating physical activity into their components.
It's definitely really important. It's just I haven't encountered. We have a really good program at our county hospital in San Francisco. We're doing the kind of case management, including the home visiting, but they don't really have a physical
activity.
And it's really encouraging the families, as part of their education, to engage in physical activity on their own. Going for walks, climbing a flight of stairs whenever it's possible, and just going the long way around. So it's really engaging them as family. So when we provide education, we also have members of a family, caregivers for that child, all come together so that we can talk about specific challenges for that child.
Having a safe, structured place for the kids to be physically active is also important, because there are probably really legitimate concerns about safety when it comes to playing outside.
There are, which was why we thought it was so important to really get into this agreement with a good sports facility that would be able to provide a safe yet effective environment for the kids.
Great.
Okay. Welcome.
Are you all from the earlier session?
Yeah, we just finished.
Yeah, I'm just moderating.